Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And it's 2020.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. Twice in one night, it's 2020.
Yeah, well, it's going to be 2020 for a lot of nights.
Yeah, yeah. So what did you do to celebrate the new year?
Christmas.
Oh, okay.
I watched the fireworks.
That was it?
Yeah, we have for Christmas on the New Year's Eve.
I had a wondrous time. I was on a cruise. That was fun. Had a lot of good times in Nassau. So much that most of the crew didn't remember half the day in Nassau. That's how much we drank. It was kind of funny. Because, you know, you go to Nassau and the drinks are really cheap and they're plentiful. You know, you go to these places like, okay, what do you want? Well, we'll take some beers. Well, do you want, what kind of beers? Well, I don't know, whatever beers there are. And it turns out there's, you know, you get five beers and five shots for the same price.
Like, okay. $5.
Yeah, it's like, it was like $15. But anyway, and that was it. Some nice New Year's Eve with some friends. It was relatively quiet, but it was nice. I want to thank Ryan Radisky once again for his incredible amount of work he put in throughout the year to put together a compilation show, two of them.
Yes, two.
What's amazing is Ryan listens to every show, clips portions of the show, categorizes each of them into a specific, area, whether it's just stories or oil related or, you know, market related, and categorizes all of these, puts them all together all the year, then puts them back together for the end of the year show. So that's pretty cool. A lot of work.
I would say he probably has a knack for organization.
Definitely. I couldn't do that. It's too much work. Plus, he's got to listen to us drone on incessantly. That's got to be tough.
He has a knack for patience.
Yeah. So there's a big ending for 2019. Markets were just continually acting as though everything was resolved. But we had a little bit of a slow start for 2020. And, of course, some big news. We have disruption in the Middle East. Tonight we saw that Iran retaliated by 10 or dozen missiles being fired into a Air Force base in Iraq that we occupy. So we'll see what the retaliation of the retaliation is going to be now. I mean, do you think this is going to escalate?
Nah.
It's going to just calm down. Okay, we're even Steven now?
That's it? The whole thing is something of a hoax.
What kind of hoax?
Well, you should listen to the No Agenda show. Adam got it from somebody. I think I know who. The concept that this guy, Soleimani, whatever, how do you ever want to pronounce his name, was getting pretty popular, and you can see by the number of people that were marching, millions of them with giant pictures of his head, was getting pretty popular and probably dangerously popular in Iran. And he could have, and he also ran the secret police and everything else. He could have taken over the place, and he had to be done away with.
Oh, so you're saying this was an inside-outside job?
Yeah, inside-outside job, yeah.
Hmm.
And that's why you're not going to say, I mean, if they sunk a destroyer or did something a little more extreme and fire random missiles, I'd be a little more apt to think there was more to it than this.
So I guess if we are to conclude that this was a shot to maintain the powers that be in their place and it was a combined effort, then we would say that the missiles then would have hit near the area, but not actually hit any target.
Is anybody killed?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. If it hit kind of sand and exploded.
Yeah, that's what you do. Or tell everybody to duck an hour before it happens.
Ah, it's coming. We're going to blow up this outhouse on the base. And that's it.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
The outhouse. What, my outhouse?
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But so far, we haven't found any exact information about this. We're going to talk a little bit about tonight some of the findings that I saw and research that I've been looking at related to what markets do during wars and conflicts. I think it's going to be kind of interesting. The manufacturing that we saw this week falling further into contraction territory, the lowest we've seen since 2009. Employment report comes out this Friday. Expectations are for a decent report, about 155,000. Added to the payrolls, another 3.5% print on the unemployment rate. And I think we got to talk about frothiness, the froth.
The froth. Everyone's talking about the froth.
This froth. Our album art tonight, picked out by me because I made it, is a cup of Joe with a whole bunch of froth on it. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to see a phase one signing of the skinny partial trade deal on January 15th, supposedly, unless any of this wartime effort causes some problems. You know what, by the way, this whole news item, this whole Iranian, the assassination of the second, the general, this, what I find really interesting is the words that are being used by President Trump and some of the people in the administration, that we took him out. We took him out. What is that?
I don't know. Some military chat. I don't know where the jargon comes from.
It sounds more like mafioso.
Mobsters.
Yeah, it sounds like mafia. Hey, you know, take that guy out.
He took a ride. He took a cab ride.
Right. You know, lefty snivels over there. Take him out. Gold at a 7-year high and climbing. 1600 breach on the Iran retaliation this evening. Bitcoin range bound until this week, and boom, it moves to 8500 from about 6400 as a possibility of, I guess, a alternative to risk assets, that the people are starting to put money into gold and Bitcoin, I guess.
Yes.
So you're all caught up on the markets where we are at this point. But one of the things I thought we would discuss is what I believe, even though it happened late in 2019, was the best story of the year, which was this whole escape by former Nissan Motor chairman Carlos Ghosn. Is it Ghosn?
It's actually, it's called Ghosn, I think.
Ghosn? Yeah, silent S in there?
I guess.
His escape from Japan. How great was that?
I thought it was the best story, too.
Did you really?
Yeah, it was like a spy. It's like a cheesy spy story that people say, yeah. Yeah, especially the best part, of course, was him being
in the case,
escaping a bass guitar or a double bass, stand-up bass case, suppose. I guess he's a small guy, French.
So just to catch everybody up on what happened, this guy is under house arrest. He got, you know, did some bad dealings in Japan with Nissan, and there's some corruption involved, and Japan doesn't take very lightly to that. As a matter of fact, one of the problems in Japan, well, maybe it's not a problem, but you get caught for something like this, there's like a 99% conviction rate in Japan for this kind of stuff. And a lot of people have questioned whether or not it's really a fair system. You know, you get caught maybe, or at least you're charged, and all of a sudden you're, you know, in the 99% conviction ratio. And I guess this is what happened here. He said, you know what? I'm not sticking around for this trial.
Yeah, it's kangaroo court.
Yeah. And so what happened is, which is like, there's going to be a movie about this. You know this. It's like out of a Mission Impossible movie where you would see like people putting on masks and changing their voices and, you know, doing this whole incredible amount of recon. So he's under house arrest. Somehow he gets on a train to Osaka. He goes to a hotel with two collaborators. And like you said, there was some kind of a musical instrument case of some sort that he was wheeled out in so he wouldn't be found. So, you know, these two guys go in. I don't know what they're doing. They're doing some kind of maybe work in his house. And they package him up. And they take him in a car. And they go get to a train. And they go to Osaka. The reason why they went to Osaka was because they found this particular private airport didn't utilize specialized scanning so that he would not be found inside this case. It's like the only one in Japan that didn't use this scanning that would find out what was actually inside. And at about 10 o'clock at night, he gets out. They go to the Kansai Airport, boarded a private jet, which took off at about 11 p.m., and he arrives in Turkey and then leaves there and goes to Lebanon, which doesn't have any extradition back to Japan. So, I mean, this required number one.
That's one of the stories.
I like the story.
I mean, there's other stories, but that's one of them. And he got somehow managed to get to Lebanon, where he should be okay.
And his wife's there.
And he says he's going to spill his guts on this thing. He's going to tell everybody what really happened and what a bunch of crumb bums these Japanese are. I always get the sense there's some Yakuza thing involved because they get involved in some of these big companies all the time.
Well, why would they want to save him? Maybe they were involved in the...
No, I don't think they said anything was saving him.
Or helping
him. I think they're involved in him getting arrested and this scapegoating for something that went on that went bad.
You have to admit, this had to take incredible amount of planning, outside help, money. I mean, this is a specialized team.
Well,
the
guy was kind of spooky. He had some funny connections anyway. Let's face it. He had like four or five passports. He had a Brazilian passport, a French passport, a Lebanese passport, a Japanese passport. I don't know what you need all these passports for. So I don't know.
Well,
it's going to continue. The story's not over, so we'll get more out of it.
You don't know if somebody's going to come in the middle of the night and bag him up, take him back.
No,
Japanese don't like to lose
guards.
Face. Yeah. So on markets, talking about markets for a second, and in the theme of the frothiness. So there's a chart that we put on the show notes, episode number 488 of dhunplugged.com. And what this shows is, I thought this is really interesting because this really stuck out. It's the PEG ratio. This is a ratio that combines the use of PE. The problem with PE is in a standalone state, PE doesn't tell you anything. It tells you the price to earnings. Okay, that's great. All right, so what is it? You don't know if that's a level that's high or low for the stock, high or low for the stock within its peer group, its sector, based on the market. But when you do a PEG ratio, it brings in the expected growth rate of the future and it combines it with it divides it. And when you have a PEG ratio of 1, where you go PE divided by growth, therefore the stock is usually considered relatively fairly valued. Now, that doesn't mean if you have a 1.2, it's terribly overvalued or a 0.8 is really undervalued. But when you start getting away from that core one, that one number, starts getting a little bit hairy. So what I did was we plotted the S&P 500 PEG ratio. So the PEG ratio of the price to earnings of S&P 500 stocks and to their expected growth rate over a five-year period. And look at this chart.
Yeah, I saw it. Roller coaster. It's very funny.
But what's interesting is how high we are now, the highest we've been since 1995.
Is it the highest you've ever been?
I don't know if you can go back even further because you start getting a little questionable about, you know, did we have that data for five-year expected consensus numbers on companies back before that? So this is kind of clean data. But still, if you look at where we were in, let's say, going up into 2009, where it kind of got crazy, or 14 or 15, where it started spiking up. But this spike is very similar to what we saw in 2008, that kind of ramp up.
Yeah.
But 1.8 right now, what that signifies is that people are willing to pay 80% more for the growth potential in the future of a stock, in this particular instance, the S&P 500. And if you look at the normal numbers here, like kind of glance through here, you know, 1.4, 1.3 is kind of the averaging of this, if you can kind of visualize that. So 1.8 is pretty high. Oftentimes when we see these kinds of spikes, you know, you do see any kind of a quick spike, it either down or up, it's usually rectified pretty quickly. So this level really says that people are throwing fundamentals out the window. Doesn't matter about earnings, doesn't matter about anything. They're just buying stocks to buy stocks.
Yeah.
It could last a little bit longer, but I would venture to say that we can't get much higher than this before something cracks.
Yeah, I think it's because something's got to give.
Something's got to give. Frothiness. Got to pat down that froth. ISN Manufacturing, in its deepest slump in more than a decade, the Institute for Supply Management, or the ISM, said that its national factory activity is at 47.2, down from 48.1 in November, the lowest reading since 2009. The ISM services, which came out today, which is a more important number for the U.S. economy, came out at, I think, 54, 55. And so, you know, you're getting still a growth level for the entire economy. But look at this manufacturing level. It's looking
pretty ugly. It's in the contraction zone.
Yeah, not good.
Which makes no sense considering the peg.
Well, that's right. Or the peg makes no sense because of this. Right. Yeah.
Or either way.
Either way. It's interchangeable. So I don't know what this tells us, but I mean, we're not a major manufacturing country at this point, although we do have a component of that. So we are more of a service related. So that's not a problem. But I got to tell you, this is just, you know, this depth of manufacturing and manufacturing being in a recession, no question about that. And when you look at the returns of like industrial stocks last year, not the top level, but, you know, maybe four or five rungs down on the rung in terms of performance, they performed really well. So I don't know what people are thinking. I mean, it's really starting to wonder more and more about what's happening here.
What specifically is bothering you?
What's bothering me is the incredible chase for stocks in a situation where we just have so-so economics as a backdrop, earnings growth that is not only slowing, that's going to be negative, and it has been negative the last few quarters. Even if it does pick up, maybe we'll see, you know, a couple of 3%, 4% growth, and the potential for the end of a Fed dovish or loosening campaign. Also, the real reality of the Fed taking back some of the repo money they put in, that $400, $450 billion at the end of the repo market in the last 3 months of the year. Something is just weird.
Well, they're pumping money back in. You've been passing this one chart around the internet, which I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's, oh, look at this. Oh, I don't know. And I'm thinking, I have my own theory, which is offbeat, which is that they have implemented modern monetary theory and they just aren't going to admit it.
Right, because they didn't admit that the last round of bond buying was quantitative easing. They said, especially, it is not. Do not think of this as quantitative easing.
And I'm thinking of it as not either. I'm thinking of it as modern monetary theory, just printing money for the sake of it.
But what's the difference?
Well, the difference is the excuse.
Oh, okay. So the way that you couch it, the way that you put it forth. I mean,
right. And of course, they don't want to say that they're just printing money. That's not going to fly. I don't know what have they said that, what is the rationale for this?
I mean, they said it's to liquefy the short-term and overnight lending markets.
Yeah, there you go.
In they order got some to, focus thing yeah, of course say. They do. You know,
yeah,
and,
it's great.
And it's only going to be for a short time. And
it won't be for a short time.
No, it's not.
You see the trend. The trend is obvious where it's headed.
But what's really interesting is that during the darkest hours of the financial crisis, where the Fed was going and putting money into the markets, that was only 10 years ago, where they were going and actively liquefying the markets, they were only doing $80 billion a month. Now they're up to $100 billion. I mean, it could be said, well, it's 10 years later.
If 85 works, 100 works better.
I suppose.
Can't you, I mean, can you imagine something? I mean, I can imagine people saying that. This is like the problem that the mind of the human being has. Oh, well, this toxic poison I'm going to use to kill ants. I'm supposed to mix it 50 to 1. Well, I'll probably kill a lot more ants 25 to 1.
That's not right.
And by the way, working in the petrochemical industry for a while as an air pollution inspector, these guys, they're beside themselves about this. They actually, there's formulations that they say on the bottle, 10 to 1, 15 to 1, whatever it is.
Yeah.
They claim that that is so researched that any variation from that number, because you think you're doing yourself a favor, is stupid and dangerous.
Dangerous to who? To humans?
Yeah.
Well, it probably is. I mean, if a 50 to 1 can kill ants, I'm sure that a cup of it straight up will kill you.
Well, it doesn't take even that much.
Yeah. It's poison, for God's sakes. It's killing an animal, an insect, whatever.
There used to be this product. I think it's still around. I think it was an herbicide. I can't remember exactly what it was used for. It was called Paraquat.
Paraquat.
And Paraquat was, it looks like Coca-Cola. And some stupid people apparently use, you know, they run out, you know, they get a big jarring thing of it and they put it in Coke bottles for some reason. And there's absolutely no anecdote antidote
okay.
for Paraquat poisoning. You take one swig of this and you might as well just shoot yourself.
Really?
Yeah, and the people are dying from it all the time because they put it in Coke bottles. A little known story. Anyway, onward.
I had a friend that lived across the street from me when I was growing up. And back in the day, they would use, I forgot the chemical's name, but they'd use this chemical and they would drill holes in the ground around your house and pump some in. And it would seep into the soil. And it was this, you know, terrible, terrible chemical. But it was in the soil and it kind of surrounded the house. It kept all the bugs and the rats and all that stuff out, right? Well, one day this guy drills a hole and he starts filling and filling and filling. And he turns out he's just pumping all this stuff into their basement.
Yeah.
The house was abandoned for like 8 years.
That's a good story.
Oh, this is the same. I have two similar but different stories about the same person. My friend Ira from back in the day, Ira and Steven. They had a boat. Went to the gas station to fill the boat up. So like, you know, most people, you take it, put it into the nozzle, into the hole. Well, they put it into the rod holder, not to the gas tank. And they filled up the boat with gas. So the boat was literally filled up with gas.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Two pumping stories for the same family. All right, let's talk about, we got to talk about Tesla. Tesla, record highs. They beat Wall Street estimates for annual vehicle deliveries and met their low end of their own target. Stock went up.
Of course.
Demand for its mass-produced Model 3 sedans and overseas sales pick up. All this great stuff happened. They delivered 112,000 vehicles in the fourth quarter, including 92,000 plus Model 3s, 20,000 Model X and S and SUVs.
How'd that short work out?
Didn't. It was blown out in a day. Market cap is now just under the combined market cap for Ford and GM.
Yeah.
Tesla's worth $84 billion. Ford and GM total $86 billion.
Well, they should leverage that right now and buy Ford and GM.
Yeah, that would be good. Just buy out Ford.
Remember when the AOL has leveraged themselves and they end up buying these big giant real publishers?
Yep. Yep.
Warner. Time Warner.
How'd that work out?
Well, it was botched because of the CEO. But if you take this, idea and you have Elon would do the whole thing. He might be able to pull it off. I mean, if Elon Musk was the CEO of Ford, I'm sure they'd have a lot different product lineup.
They would, but you know, the difference is if Tesla is delivering, let's see, 112,000 vehicles in the fourth quarter. Let's call it 500,000 vehicles for the year, right? Ford is doing like 17 million or some ridiculous number.
Sure.
And what's also interesting is that Tesla is now the largest car manufacturer in America by market cap historically. They actually eclipsed Ford's highest ever market cap in its history.
Wasn't GM a bigger market cap at some point?
I don't think so. I think Ford was like $80 billion at one point.
Wow.
The only bigger company in the world,
you know,
is Volkswagen.
It's baby steps. He could probably run Ford.
I'm sure he could. I mean, you know, why not? He's running what? He's running the solar company, Tesla. He's got the rocket company, right? He could run all these. Put a couple more on there. Fold them in.
Yeah, he's got his flamethrower company.
Oh, he's got the boring company. That's the boring company. Right, the boring company where he has flamethrowers. He has actually boring tunnels underground.
Yeah.
And yesterday he was dancing up a storm. Oh, he's a terrible dancer. Dancing up a storm. It was all over the Twitter sphere today.
Mm. Dancing about what?
He was opening up and releasing a new line in China. So he was on stage in China, and he did like a mini strip tease with taking his jacket off and dancing like Elaine from Seinfeld.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
the worst.
Yeah. Moving along, vaping. Trump administration is banning flavored e-cigarette pods and flavored liquid nicotine products, with the exception of menthol and tobacco flavors. Now, I don't understand why, if you're banning all flavors, why menthol always gets excluded. What is that about?
I believe, now this is just what I've heard over the years. I believe that methanol.
Nope. Try again.
What was it?
Menthol.
Methanol. Well, methanol is definitely not going to be very good for you. So I believe that that particular flavor, quote unquote flavor, is it when combined with tobacco, it creates an addictive, more addiction than normal.
These were the days of us. I used to smoke way back when, and I couldn't stand menthol. Salem's and Marlboro menthol, and there was a couple other ones. Ugh. They would always like burn on the way down. Huh. You know, not that tobacco was any pleasure, but again, I don't understand why they continue to have menthol as the exception here. There's a couple of the questions about this whole thing too. Are they going to allow for, if you're not allowed to have flavored e-cigarette pods and liquid nicotine products, there's some question, even though that says this, is about refills and other things and all that. So now nobody can buy this regardless of age, because don't forget, they just also lifted the age of this to 21 for people buying, for anybody buying vaping deals.
Yeah.
So now this is going to go on the black market.
They're moving to this new thing. This is vaporized tobacco leaf product is coming out, and it's going to all go to that.
So which is like what the original vaping of marijuana was. Where you'd vaporize, you'd have this little device that would heat it up to a specific level, and it would just vaporize it, not burn it.
Unlike the hash pipe.
Ah, the good old hash pipe. Ah, those are the days, huh?
Yeah.
I could tell you some stories from Morocco one day.
Okay.
Large caps ruling the universe. Apple and Microsoft. This is the final update for 2019, something we've talked about a couple of times, but Apple was up 85% last year. Microsoft was up 54% last year. And together they accounted for 15% of the S&P's total return in 2019. As a matter of fact, their total influence
everything
on,
else should just shut down.
Yeah, just why not? The next eight biggest contributors combined was less than their contribution to the S&P 500 last year. And let's not even talk about the Qs. You know, the NASDAQ 100. I mean, these guys really put in some performance.
I'd say.
Yep. So we got a little sneaky Pete alert. A little sound effect for that. Sneaky Pete alert. Amazon.com, you know, they bought Ring, which is a security camera. You know, Ring was, if you know the history of Ring, you know how it started and what happened with that?
Actually, no.
So Ring was originally a device, you know, just like it is now. It was, you know, a camera. And the owner, inventor, made a presentation on Shark Tank. And the Shark Tank fella said, you know, who the hell needs a camera on their garage? No, thanks. We're not doing a deal with you. So he does it on his own, gets some financing, takes it to a $1 billion company that Amazon bought for $1 billion. And now Amazon owns Ring. I have it. As a matter of fact, tomorrow, I have
I was just going to say, we should at least mention the Shark Tank guys are obviously boneheads.
Yes. Well, they just obviously had no, I don't know. I don't know how they missed this one. This seemed like a layup. As a matter of fact, when I got my first Ring camera for my house, I said, you know, I need to look at this company because this technology is great. It's a reasonable price. I'm going to buy the stock if it's public, and it wasn't public. So I guess Jeff Bezos had a Ring on his house too and decided he could buy the product instead, buy the company. But tomorrow I have a Ring alarm system coming from my house. So I have a traditional alarm system now that hooks up to Central Station, you know, all the good stuff, right? With motion detectors and door jam alarm systems, all that stuff, you know, the magnets. And they were charging me for the service something like $150 per quarter. So I said to him, listen, I want to change this because I want something that's more up to date. This one's a couple of years old. I want to be able to turn it on and off on my phone. Okay. This is going on for 6 months. The Ring system, I think I paid $300 for the entire system. And since I'm already monitoring with a camera with a premium plan, that's $100 a year, my boat, and I have a camera right on the boat and the front door, I don't have to pay anything extra for the Central Station and all that. So basically it's $100 a year and $300 of equipment. And that will put my whole house that can be totally operated by my phone. That's a good deal.
Yeah, until somebody hacks it.
Until somebody hacks it, as this story now goes. Amazon's Ring home security camera has been sued by an Alabama homeowner who said the camera's defective design leaves purchasers vulnerable to cyber attacks. So in the proposed class action filed last week, the judge said that an unknown hacker recently accessed his Ring home camera with his children, aged 7, 9, and 10, were playing basketball in the driveway and through its speaker system encouraged them to move closer to the camera. Come here, kids.
Yeah, there's a bunch of these stores and they're all hilarious.
Yeah, come here, kids. You want to play a game? Yeah, but the problem is that I don't have any cameras inside the house, so I don't have to worry too much about somebody turning on the camera when I'm in my skivvies. Because that would be embarrassing.
Yeah, I'd think.
But they could probably hack it. Who knows? All those videos are stored on the servers of Ring. They're stored indefinitely.
Indefinitely?
The program. Maybe it's a year. Yep. Uber. My father-in-law, he called me today. And he needed a ride. He wanted to know if he should call Uber or Lint.
Tell him to call Lint.
Uber or Lint. I'm like, I've tried to tell him 100 times, you know, the real name, but he doesn't seem to care. Anyway, Uber Technologies, Uber, on Tuesday, it said its founder, former CEO Travis Kalanick, will resign from the company's board of directors. Okay, we knew that was coming. He sold all of his stock and all that, but he's going to be moving on to Cloud Kitchens. Going to be funding that and running that company, or at least working with that company. And this is one of these kitchen-only restaurants to supply food delivery. You know, these ghost kitchens?
Oh, yeah, the ones where the delivery guys eat half the food.
Okay. Is that what they do?
Have you heard those stories?
I've heard some weird stories on delivery, but I haven't heard the delivery guys are eating half the food.
Well, they're not eating half the food, but if you got a tasty treat in there, you can be sure they're going to take a bite out of it.
Hmm.
French fries are very vulnerable.
Yeah, well, just one or two, right? You'll never know.
Yeah, but one or two turns to three or four. Next thing you know, the guy's chowing down on French fries. Oh, they didn't forget to put the French fries in there.
But that's with any delivery service, isn't it?
I don't know.
I mean, I get my how do I know if I'm supposed to get 8 or 9 spare ribs in my Chinese delivery? Do I check the guy's, like, his cheek to see if there's a little bit of sauce on it? You know? I mean, it could be with any one of these. But it's the same concept where you're going to be running cars for delivery and you have a kitchen that's going to be outfitted for a particular restaurant and their recipes, and then you just send them out. So
wait a minute. So these guys are going to do OEM work on restaurant recipes?
Yes.
So in other words, you got the Blue Goose restaurant. Let's say it's a 3-star place in San Francisco. And they have a menu for takeout. And they don't even cook the food anymore. This restaurant does it?
Yeah, in other words, wow. I can get Blue Goose delivered to me, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, because then you could do it. Right. Yeah, then it would be right. Yeah, so in other words, I can start getting restaurant food from New York City.
Correct.
Direct delivered to me because the clone kitchen is cooking it locally.
That's correct. And you could have.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, that's what all these ghost kitchens are all about. You set up a kitchen. You have maybe. Some of them may be specifically for a, so you have a big warehouse, gigantic warehouse, and you have all these kitchens set up in there. Some of them may be specific for a restaurant. There may be some crossovers that will maybe cook a particular recipe for many different restaurants. You know, so it depends on how it's set up. But in the end, it's one place that will create. Now, that also means that I can order in, what do you say, Blue Moon? Blue Moon. And I can have maybe a Peter Luger steak from New York. So I can have a San Francisco meal and my wife can have a New York meal delivered.
Well, the problem is, of course, for anyone who knows how to cook, the Peter Luger steak, if that's what you wanted, is going to be a steak. A lot of these places have their own aging facilities, and the steak is a very specific, comes from a specific farm, makes it a really dynamite product. And Florida's version is not going to be the same by any means.
No, but I had a client send me this week two, I don't know, 4-inch porterhouse and Peter Luger sauce and 2 slabs of bacon from Peter Luger's on ice. It got delivered. So you just deliver that right down to here.
So what you would do is Peter Luger.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't my favorite steakhouse, I should mention, but it's well-known. Mm-hmm. Peter Luger could pack a truck full of the stuff that they're normally selling at their place and then haul the truck down to Florida, maybe another truck to Austin, Texas, where they would be interested, and probably another truck to San Francisco, send out 3 trucks full of food, a refrigerated truck. And it would be that would be the same ingredients as the Peter Luger, only cooked locally.
That's correct.
That's a great idea.
Oh, there you go. Well, I think it's pretty cool, too. Cloud Kitchens, or that's what he's getting. They call them ghost kitchens. That's the trade name, you know, because there's no, you know, when you look at it, if you pass it in the road, you'll never know what it is. It's not like you can go up there and get something. They don't want people going up there necessarily and ordering. It's only for takeout. And then you also have a pool of drivers that know to go to that particular place. They don't have to drive around to 12 different restaurants. They're waiting there just to go right out and deliver it. Now, the only problem is the proximity issue, right? You can only have that really in big cities. Can't have it where it's a 35-minute ride for...
No, you can't have it in the middle of Nowheresville.
Right.
But it's in big cities where people want to eat this kind of food. Mm-hmm. And besides that, if I'm living outside in Iowa somewhere, I don't need to eat Peter Luger's steaks. They got some great steaks in Iowa. I'm not missing out on anything.
Peter Luger may not want to open up that particular restaurant, but you know what? I would love... to get some true, somehow, some way, some decent Tex-Mex here in Florida, you can't get from, you know, or, you know, I don't know, something else. What's popular in San Francisco? Maybe
Mission Burritos.
Mission Burritos. Get the recipe. Those, and maybe they prepackage some of the food or not, but, you know, they get them here. So, good. Or how about In-N-Out Burger somehow? That would be great. That won't happen. I don't think it'll be fast food.
They're not going to let that happen.
Anyway, so take a look at that. If you can, find us a way to invest in some of these things. Maybe call up Travis. See if we can get in on the inside of Cloud Kitchens.
Travis. Hey, Travis.
Yeah.
That is good. And by the way, I think we should start pronouncing it Uber.
Uber. What about Lint? Do we keep Lint at Lint or?
Lint is less. Lint, I don't think so. But I like Uber.
All right. We will. Give that that nod to Richard for that one. All right, betting on it now. We got fantasy football. One of the things that was outlawed for some time was the whole idea. Remember that DraftKings was outlawed and then it was okay to do? Now they decided to get on the open market. And the way they did this was really interesting. So DraftKings was going to go public. They decided not to go through the whole process and they merged with what's called a SPAC, a Special Purpose Acquisition Company. And they merged into this company called Diamond Eagle Acquisition, symbol DEAC. And it had a market cap of roughly $500 million. They also merged with this company called SB Tech, which is a betting and gaming technology company. So they put these all together in a SPAC. Basically, it didn't cost them anything. This is kind of like what companies used to do with the shell idea. They used to buy, you know, people would have a shell of a company.
Well, they do that now with microservices architecture.
Yeah.
Well, very few companies have half the things they're doing on there. They lease this out and rent that out and they subscribe to this and that.
What I'm saying is getting onto the market, getting onto the exchange. There was a time there you would buy IPOs, you'd fund a company, you'd have it sitting there. You'd have your IPO attorney that would specialize in this, go out there and find companies that want to be IPO'd but don't want to go through the whole process.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Yeah. Well, how's that different than a reverse merger?
A reverse merger. That's kind of the same thing. Well, it's pretty much the same thing, but this is a company that hasn't been on the market that goes into the market. So it's never been on the market before. But it's kind of the same. So fantasy sports, you can take a look at DEAC if you're interested in that. Boeing's raising some cash. They need to raise about $5 billion in debt to cover expenditures that could top $15 billion. And they have plenty of cash on hand, but why not borrow it at low rates, right?
Oh, yeah.
And here's what we need to really focus in on. So there's been some reports and everybody's like worried and thinking about, okay, what's going to happen if we go to war? You know, what's going to happen to the markets? Oil prices are going to go up. And one of the things that's really interesting is that, I don't think I put this on here, but in years past, trouble in the Middle East turned into be, even it was Middle East centric without our involvement.
You got the Gulf War on there.
Yeah. But it was a big problem because people got concerned that oil prices would go up and it would hurt our economy. Now that could happen, but we're a net exporter of oil and actually slightly helps us. Higher oil prices help the oil industry, which is much bigger than it was in the past. And since we're not dependent on OPEC or any other source for oil necessarily, yeah, that issue is kind of gone. But Bank of America sees that the S&P has a tendency to dip about 6-7% on geopolitical shocks, but believes that most of the losses recovered in the subsequent three-month period. So the big question is this a geopolitical shock? This whole nonsense is going on.
I don't know. Is it?
I think it is.
I guess technically it has to be.
I think it is. But here's this chart. You got to look at this table. Anybody that's listening, you got to go over to the show notes here. This is pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
So go through this.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll go through it right now. Just the generality. War makes money.
Yeah, that's correct. War is good. So what we looked at was 1926 to 2013 and the average rate of return of, let's say, large cap stocks, small cap stocks, bonds and all that. But I'm just going to stick on let's just look at the large cap stocks here for our discussion. So from 1926 to 2013, when the last war, I guess, closed up, the return on large cap stocks was at 10 and the risk that we can look at from a standard deviation point is 19%. All wars, if you combine all the wars that we've had, World War II, Korean, Vietnam, and Gulf War during this period, the return on the large cap stocks is 11.4%, which was higher than the average return over the entire period. And the risk was lower. This makes no sense, by the way. This is one of those things that you scratch your head and you're like, how is this even possible? World War II, which was a major industrial push in World War II, I will give you that there was a lot of people put to work. We had that ramp up and the tank building and the need for bullets and all this good stuff, right? So there was a big move up 16% during that period. Risk was 13.8. Korean War up 18%.
Well, before you continue, you might as well mention small caps were up 32.8%.
That was because of, if you know the history about the, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, the American machine that was created to do things like companies like Hershey's did amazingly well during World War II because they were packaging chocolate in all the MREs.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at all these little coffee companies and little cup companies, and it goes on and on. The companies that making the little screws and bolts. I mean, amazing amount of need brought the whole country in to the wartime effort. And not so much in other wars. Vietnam War, stock market was only up 6%. Risk was 12.1%. The Gulf War, 11.7%. And risk 19. So that was...
Well, you were kind of touching on the Korean War at 18%.
Yeah. I mean, amazing. Yeah. So This is the narrative that is being presented because a concern that we're going into a war and nobody wants the market to dip. So they come up with all these numbers to show you that it's not so bad. But this return is over the lifespan of the period. So one of the things you have to recognize is there is the potential for, in the initial stages, for it to dip down. And then as things are rectifying, there's a whole new confidence that's built up. And it really flies at the end, potentially, or towards the middle, towards the end, right? So it's not just, you know,
we need to see some more granular charts for each one of these episodes.
Yeah, I don't have time.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Well,
somebody does.
Yeah. On that note, a couple of things. Hey, thank you so much for all the people that donated towards the end of the year. And help to support the show. It's important that everybody pitches in, spends a little bit of time with us, spends a little money with us, gives us a little donation. You go over to dhunplugged.com, click on the little yellow button, and donate to the show. It is very much appreciated for all the things that we provide throughout the year. And one of the things that we do is we have little gifts and things that we do for the winners of things like the Close to the Pin. And that's where we are right now. And let me tell you, I was in the office on December 31st watching the market towards the end. And I got to tell you something. It was a race to the finish because the market was moving and grooving at the end and it was flip-flopping the top three places. So what was looked like up until 5 minutes to four on Friday or whatever day that was, that's 31st, what looked like was going to be the winner turned out because the market ramped at the end, that wasn't the winner. And the winner for the Close to the Pin Cup for 2019 is Matt V, who came in $31 off of, or 0.11%, where the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed for the year. And like I said,
Steve, nice shot.
Yeah, Steve B and Sean H were just kicking it right to the end. As a matter of fact, I think that Steve B was in the winning slot most of the afternoon until about 10 to 4. And then start getting a little crazy. So we are going to send Steve, if you're listening. Excuse me. No, we're not sending Matt. Steve anything. Matt. Sorry, Steve got excited there. Matt.
Steve already got his t-shirt.
Yes. Matt, you're going to be getting another t-shirt if you want. But more importantly, you're going to get the winner's trophy, which is a beautiful, and it's about, I would say, 2.5 feet tall trophy. So make sure you contact us. I'll contact you as well, and we'll send that off. And then you send us a picture of yourself with that.
With the trophy.
Yep.
Yes.
All right. Got a couple of things. Where are we on time?
We need to see pictures of these winners.
Yes. I got one recently. I should have sent it to you.
Does the winner have a big beard? Has he got white hair? Has he got an open shirt with a big bunch of chains? We don't know.
Yeah. Well, usually we ask to send a picture with the DH Unplugged shirt on it. So put your chains on the outside. Yum Brands. You know that group, Yum Brands?
Oh, Yum.
Yep. They did their first major acquisition. And this week they entered into a definitive agreement to purchase The Habit Restaurants. You have those out by you? The Habit Burger?
Nope. Wait. Oh. Yes, it's the burger place.
Yeah, the burger place. It was founded in 1969.
Yeah, they're always with. They're combined and on the West Coast. I've noticed this in two or three spots. I saw one of these last shops in Washington State, and there's one right in the town in Albany, Berkeley area. And what it consists of is a pet food place, a Habit restaurant, and a Sprouts farmer's market. And some other thing, and it's all part of a deal that's sold collectively. Hmm. And there's the same little thing, exactly the same architecture, same everything. It was in Washington State. There was the exact same thing down here.
I guess you just get everything done at once. You buy your pet food, you buy your food for the house, and then you go buy yourself a burger.
I've never had the Habit place has been there for a while. I've never had a burger from them.
There's some in Florida too. I've never had it either. It has a weird name, Habit. I don't think I like the name. It's either a combination of what the nun wears or something bad that you do, like biting your nails.
Well, maybe they're probably implying that you have one, you make a habit out of it.
Maybe. Habit burger. Jeremy Siegel, he is the guy who originally predicted Dow 2000. He talks to him like Jeremy Siegel. So Looks like that. He's forecasting the Dow may hit 40,000 by the end of the next 4 or 5 years, unless something derails the market's bull.
Well, I can predict that is going to hit 40,000 someday.
Yeah. So you got to hear the whole entire forecast. He's going to forecast the Dow may hit 40,000 in the next 4 or 5 years, unless something derails the market's bull run. That's his prediction.
That's not a prediction.
And he keeps on showing up on CNBC. Yep. Little Caesars, last food story. Little Caesars will partner with DoorDash to provide pizza delivery services at 3,600 restaurants in the United States and Canada starting Monday. Is you know, it's pizza. I think it's. Have you had Little Caesars? It's god awful.
Is it? I've never had it. I've actually been, because we have good real pizza places here that are very, you know, they got the wood ovens and they got the Italian products, and so I have never had, and I will admit this now, I have never had a Wendy's burger.
Oh,
and I've kind of decided never to have one. I don't know why. It's just a thing. I never had one. I have never had Mountain Mike's pizza. I have never had a Caesar's pizza, a little pizza. I don't believe I had a Domino's pizza.
You're not missing much. The names you just ran off to me, you're not missing much. So
that's what I'm getting the impression of. And there's two or three other pizza places I can't think of that I know of, but are famous and they're big.
It's Pizza Hut.
Papa John's. I've never had a Papa John's.
Pizza Hut. Yeah, they're not good.
Pizza Hut I have had.
Yeah, you're talking to a New Yorker here, and you know any of those things are almost an abomination.
Yeah, well, I know what you mean.
All right, we're going to throw something out there just because it's the beginning of the year. We're not doing anything more than that just because it's the beginning of the year. You ready for this? We have one.
I think so.
A Fed limerick.
Oh, you have? I didn't see it on the list.
There is a lot of calling for this, so I thought I'd drum one up tonight. Just to start the year, not to make it a regular occurrence. So you can tell me what you think, okay?
Dude, now what were the limericks we were doing before?
Fed limericks.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Yeah. There was a big man who said to cut. To the Fed, he wouldn't shut up. Fed rate should come down. Hey, Powell, you're a clown, said the Donald in his scholarly rebut.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
I think we should reintroduce the Fed limericks. Oh,
you think so?
Yeah. It amused me.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. It's official. Fed limericks are back. So if you have one, send it on to dhemail at dhunplugged.com. dhemail at dhunplugged.com. And we will get that going. But you know, we do have this week something kind of new. Yes?
Another brain teaser.
This is DH Unplugged's brain teaser.
Tom sent me that today.
Stark weather?
Yeah. Nothing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. His girlfriend Alex actually did the voiceover on that.
She'll get there.
Yeah. So new this week, we have this one. This is a brain teaser for this week. Kind of keeping it hopefully a little bit on the easier side. But here it is. First, I threw away the outside and cooked the inside. Then I ate the outside and threw away the inside. What did I eat?
I don't know. What did you eat?
That's the question. We'll give you the answer next week.
Next show.
Be sure to listen next week for the answer.
She's got to put that New York accent on a little thicker. Jersey.
Be sure to listen next week for the answer.
Yeah, a little Sylvester the Cat would be good to just spray it out a little bit. All right.
This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned and will disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment along with the performance information from the date discussed as well as any additional important disclosures. There you go. If I gotta look at this, it looks like the futures.
All the shorts are gone.
It looks like the futures have come up. I want to just look at this real quickly. They've kind of just skyrocketed from where they were. Yeah, ES futures are down 10. Nothing. They were down 30 points more, another 1%. So everything's been coming up throughout the evening, which is what we predicted would happen because nothing keeps this market down. But yeah, we pretty much, I have a question for you. Do we want to get rid of the stocks that we had on the list from last year?
We tried that a couple of years ago. It made a mess.
Yeah, that's true.
Then we had an alternate idea, which we used last year, and that's the one I think we should implement once again.
Which is what we want versus what we don't want?
Yeah. You can take, in other words, this is your one chance to get rid of the stocks on here that you don't think are going to do anything.
Well, I have an easy task of it because I only have one stock on the list.
Yeah, they all got wiped out.
Let's go through this and then you tell me what you want to keep or you know what, you could just email me, whatever you want to do.
No. Let's go through. We got time.
All right. Good.
Because I got some stocks I want to put on here.
All right. So we got Substate up 11, 17 up Advanced Drainage, Discovery up. Your stuff is doing great. Only have one left. Kodiak Sciences.
Well, I do have one dead money went to bottom, but that was only just recently picked. I think I'll keep my whole collection.
Wow. Well, I'll keep my whole collection.
We didn't do anything.
No, we didn't do anything. So there you go. It was a decision, though, not to do anything. We made a decision not to do anything.
Okay, so I got a couple items I want to throw on here.
Okay.
This is insiders. I like this one, Thermogenesis Holdings, a medical appliance and equipment company.
And the symbol?
THMO.
THMO.
And it's one of the big Chinese, I don't know who these people are, some large Chinese, I think they're an operation like KKR or something like that. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But I don't care who they are. They bought it from the looks of it. Let's see. That would be a billion. It looks like about – I think is the reason the stock kind of popped up. Maybe I'm wrong with this number. But it looks to me like they bought $1.5 trillion.
I don't think that's the case, unless it was in yuan or something like that or in yen.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's probably true. But I'm in.
Okay. Got it. All right. We got it for insiders. Okay. Got that.
And then there's the other one that has me kind of, I was looking at this, the thing is jumping like a nuts. It's going nuts. And I don't know what to do with this. Why don't you look at the chart with me? Club, CLUB is another insider's small buy compared to the $1 trillion, but it looks interesting.
So 6 months. Yeah. It just popped up over the top too, over the top of that level at, what was that? 2246.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good because you clear that level. Let me just kind of go a little bit further here out. Yeah, you clear this level and especially this level. What is this? This is 246. So where are you now? 264. Yeah, so you got a good clearing right now.
Yeah, well, let's do it.
What is this, the lending club? What is this stock? Town Sports International Holdings.
Yeah, it's a – look at it. It's a $2 stock. It's some sort of a – I believe this is up for grabs, the reason this thing jumped.
Up.
Something's up.
Grabs. That's your. Yeah,
something's screwy about this.
I gotta go.
I got a third one.
Oh.
I'm starting the year big.
Yeah, it seems that way.
But this is not an answer. This is a triangle descending. It's a REIT. I know. This is probably the more risky one. This REIT. This thing has been driving itself into the ground and has created a triangle descending opportunity with the thing at the very bottom of the triangle, which is the way I like it. Yeah. I don't like triangle descendings that are going up.
Okay.
I like the bottom feeding
type. Makes sense.
And so this thing is crashing, but it's at the bottom. The whole thing's at the bottom. So the bottom being $144 as I see it. Simon Property Group, SPG.
Oh, yeah. That's because the malls.
Yeah, malls. And they're redoing these malls left and right. This is a big thing going on. These malls are making a comeback. They're turning them into medical malls.
They do a lot of the
houses,
they do a lot of the
homeless.
Yeah. They do a lot of the exterior ones
too. These dead malls, they're all over the country. They're being revitalized. And I think there's going to be a comeback for malls, but not necessarily as the old in the old model, but maybe something new.
That's kind of interesting. All right. I have nothing because the markets are too wonky right now. I'll have something next week.
It's okay. I'm good.
488. And then that's saved. All right. We will check that. It's all good. The other one's doing okay. Baker Brothers. All right. All right. Well, it looks good to me.
All right.
I'll see you next week.
Talk to you Tuesday. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.